All right, well, I will call the meeting to order. And if I could get a motion to approve the minutes from our last meeting.
I'll make that motion.
And a second.
I'm sorry, I'm muted. I'll second.
Okay, very good. Any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Very good. Opposed? All right. Well, then we will start tonight with the Saugerties Police Chief, Joseph Sinagra. He's here this evening to discuss the Narcan program initiative.
Right. How you doing?
Good, good. So, yeah, whenever you're ready, the floor is yours.
All right. So I wanted to just thank everybody for an opportunity to be able to speak to you this evening. I was contacted by Legislator Pettit some time ago regarding a resolution that she and some other legislators were putting forth regarding implementing a program where Narcan would be stored with your automatic external defibrillators. And was kind of picking my brain about it, and I let her know that we started carrying Narcan here in Saugerties back in 2014. In fact, we were the first agency in the county to carry Narcan. I have working knowledge of Narcan because I was a paramedic prior to being a police officer, and we used Narcan quite extensively. And the reason why I tell you that is because we, early on, after we initiated the program in 2014, we began putting Narcan in town-owned AEDs. So all of our AEDs are in a secure box. When you open a door, an alarm goes off. Along with the AED, there's also a kit that contains Narcan. Now, what's really important about that is, as a paramedic, the protocol for any unconscious, unresponsive person, the first thing we pushed was Narcan. Then we would hook people up to the defibrillators, to the EKG monitor, rather, and we would use whatever intervention was required in order to bring somebody back. The importance of Narcan is that people have to understand that it's very harmless. I know there was some concern by some people when we first said we were going to put Narcan in with the defibrillators. Well, what if the kids get their hands on it? Well, nothing bad can happen. That's what's really nice about Narcan. It's just simply an opioid inhibitor. So it doesn't, if you give Narcan to an infant, it doesn't cause any harm. But the benefits by giving somebody Narcan who's overdosing on an opioid is extremely important towards saving your life, because it's really the intervention that's required. On top of everything else that paramedics do, the one thing that can reverse a normal opioid overdose is intervention with Narcan. And the reason why I say a normal opioid overdose is that we all know that there's a lot of fentanyl, laced heroin, and other opioid derivatives out there. And the problem with that is you need more Narcan when you're dealing with more potent opioids. We've been very successful with the program. We've had no issues with anybody vandalizing the AED boxes, nobody taking the Narcan out. I have a police officer who's responsible to periodically check those locations to ensure that the Narcan kits are still there. And we to this date, knock on wood, we've had no issue. And that's been about since 2015. So that's one thing that we're doing. And the other thing, I really didn't know how much you wanted me to expand on what we're doing up here as far as opioids. But back in December, we became an opioid prevention provider, which means that we have a stock of Narcan here at police headquarters. Myself and Officer Dave Stoutenberg received online training in the administration of Narcan. So we took a train-the-trainer course. And now we train individuals here at police headquarters how to use Narcan. We do it on a one-on-one basis since the pandemic. Prior to that, we were actually running classes where we'd get upwards of 30 to 40 people over at our senior center to attend the classes and get certified in administering Narcan. I'm not really sure if you had any particular questions, if I answered your questions, if this is what you thought I'd be presenting to you tonight. So I open the floor to everybody there.
Anybody have any questions?
Yeah, Chief, I think one of the main concerns, of course, was the financial aspect of it. You did answer the medical and the training concerns. Is it very expensive to run this program?
No, because what I would do is, and I don't know if the county has done this yet or not, but go out and get certified to be an opioid prevention provider. It costs no money. The requirements are is that you have willing staff to go out and teach. You're going to have a medical control. In our case, we use Dr. Ricardo Esposito from Broadway in Kingston. We have not found any doctor, quite honestly, when we solicited the medical profession as far as looking for a medical advisor. We had no problem with a doctor stepping up and saying, yes, we'll oversee your program. And really, their responsibility is twofold. Number one is to make sure that when we're going out and teaching, that we're doing it with certified instructors. And the second part of it is the doctor is the medical control as far as the script's concerned for obtaining the Narcan. And that's provided to us free from the state.
I think so, I think some of the concerns regarding the expenses had to do with the actual like installation of a potential cabinet in order to store the Narcan. And I guess if they're going to be paired with an existing defibrillator, then that kind of eliminates having to build something separate, correct?
Correct. And that's what we did. And there is no, I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt you, but the Narcan is loose in there with the AED. So we didn't have to come up with any special container to hold the Narcan. The Narcan is in a box and it's right with the defibrillator. It's right in the same pouch with the pads.
Okay. And being that the Narcan would be required anywhere that there's a defibrillator, then there's potentially a place where it could be stored that wouldn't be at any additional cost to, you know, the proprietor, the restaurant, you know, owner or wherever it may be required. Then,
correct.
So I think it kind of answers that question that we had.
The one thing that I'm not an expert on answering the question to is the county would have to take a look into how do you provide the Narcan to a private business? You know, everything right now that we do is municipal. So there's where our defibrillators are located, in the municipal buildings. So we don't, you know, that's something that I can't answer that question. And I want to make sure I'm not leaving any false information with you. So that's something you would have to take a look into is can your opioid prevention program provide that much Narcan? Because if you're going to make it a countywide where, you know, every commercial business was required to have Narcan, you know, I think the state would have a concern about supplying that type of stuff.
Now, is it every business that has a defibrillator that's required to carry Narcan, or is it every business that would be?
You know, what we have here in Stroud is just our municipal complexes. We made it a priority that the municipal-owned buildings in both the village and the town where AEDs exist, that we have Narcan kits available there.
Okay.
So we have not rolled this out under a local law to any community businesses. I think that's sure. The county endeavor here with legislative benefit.
Right. Pete?
So how does somebody know that there's a Narcan kit in that unit where the defibrillator is?
Okay, so we've made it, we publicized it when we did it. It was number one. We discussed it at town board meetings. And since these are municipal buildings, there's town employees here. The employees are aware of the fact that the Narcan is also in with the defibrillator.
Mark on the outside that says that this unit contains blah, 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 right?
No, there's nothing on the outside. It's just a defibrillator unit. So we don't have anything there that it also contains Narcan.
Would that be helpful for people to see that there's Narcan in that?
Well, if you're going to roll it out where, like, say, a gym has to have a defibrillator, yeah, it would be very helpful that there was some sort of notification that this unit also contains Narcan. You know, the biggest thing is education. So when you roll something like that out, you have to make sure that the stakeholders that would be in the vicinity of these AEDs are fully aware of the fact that they also contain Narcan kits.
Thank you.
You know, and that's something that where if the county was to roll that type of program out, your opioid prevention providers, when they do the trainings, would be able to notify. That would be one component in notifying community members that AEDs would also be containing Narcan kits.
And it is under the regulations in Section C that there should be signage or a notice that is part of this this proposal. Al keeps raising his hand.
Yeah, go ahead, Al.
One of the things I thought of when this project came out, and I kind of gleaned it from Erie County, what they've done too. And I don't know, Chief, if you've worked with them at all, is the Boy Scouts are a great asset to us. And a project such as this could actually be part of an Eagle Scout project of making little boxes and signage to go at each AED space, or maybe put the thing right alongside of it. And it wouldn't require a whole lot to get the Boy Scouts involved in something like this, I don't think. They're always looking for evil projects. And something as simple as putting lettering on them, I mean, the cost on, I mean, first of all, we have to know how many we have, how many we're dealing with. Are we dealing with 100 of them or are we dealing with 5,000 of them? That's the first thing.
There are 125. Did you want me to resend that? In the county, we got something from Lori that there's 125 in Ulster County.
Right now, correct. Right now, yep. But this is going to go long term. I mean, this is going to be something that's going to expand, I'm sure. So what I'm saying is once we have an inventory of where all they are, like there's 125 right now in the county. That's a project. I mean, you can make birdhouses basically is what we're talking about, you know, of sorts to put these in with a proper labeling. I don't think that should be much of a cost, if any cost, to the county at all. And as far as the training goes, I think when one of these is put, just like EMS trains on the IEDs, I think they can go hand in hand with the Narcan at the same time, providing that they have the certification for that. I don't think, is that a problem, Joe?
No, I think what you would do is, and that's a great way of getting the Narcan out there, is that wherever you're going to put this, we would go out. You could get your opioid prevention providers in the county, and we'd be more than willing to do it, come out and teach. And it doesn't take long to teach it. The longest part of educating people on the Narcan program is the history of the opioid epidemic. It's really 5 minutes training when it comes down to teaching someone how to use Narcan and how to administer it.
I took one of the classes, my wife and I, at the senior center. And yeah, it really is. It's pretty cool. It's quick.
Yeah. And if you're doing it through the opioid prevention program, you're dispensing free Narcan. So you're getting the Narcan for free from your opioid prevention providers. We're getting it free from the state, and you're distributing it free to the community.
So the only thing is the education on where we're placing it.
Correct.
And that's not as big of a deal as you might think.
Right.
Now, does the state train you to be a trainer? Is that how it is?
Yeah, well, actually, because of the pandemic, the training is now online. So you can actually take an online course. It takes about 35 to 40 minutes to do the course, and you can get certified as an instructor in the administration of Narcan.
Bingo. That should allay pretty much anybody's fears on how this could be administered. I think it's probably one of the easiest things we could do in the fight against opioid addiction.
And the training is free, by the way.
Even better yet.
You know, I think it's important. If there's one thing I can leave you with, you're going to get some pushback from people that may say that you're enabling the use of opioids by providing Narcan. I hear it here sometimes from people, and you got to really, it's through education that you can dispel that myth. This is about saving lives. It's not about enabling people to use drugs.
Well, we're enabling somebody to do a second chance that they may not have had.
Very good. All right, are there any other questions? All right, well, I appreciate the information. Thank you for joining us this evening.
Thank you. If you need to get a hold of me afterwards, just call me here at police headquarters anytime between 8 a.m., 6 p.m., and you can get a hold of me.
Will do.
All right, thank you. Be safe.
All right, take care. Bye. All right, very good. We will move on. We'll get into resolutions. Beginning with Resolution 266, is setting a public hearing on proposed local law number 11, a local law requiring naloxone stations next to every automatic defibrillator equipment at a public location. So I move for discussion.
I'll move it.
I'll second it.
Very good. All right, well, last month we took no action on this. The committee had some concerns and some questions, and Laura's going to get some answers and bring it back this month. And so, yeah, if anybody has any questions regarding the potential answer to what your concerns were.
Do you need to entertain a motion to...
I think we already did. No, we already
seconded
it. So,
yep.
Discussion, Laura.
I took into account, you know, again, the concerns about the administering of it, the training, and of course the cost. And when I got in touch with Chief Sinagra through Phoenix, who does a program, very good program out in New Paltz, and also with Juanita, who's doing Healing New York, I thought we had some good responses to those questions. They were put into the second draft of the resolution, which I'm on this other computer. I do see that I highlighted them so you can see them, but it did address the signage. We added that you don't have to go out and actually buy a medical case. You certainly could. They have some real attractive ones, but it can be put into the AED case itself. So I don't know if there's any other questions beyond what was added, the revisions that were made, and hopefully the revisions are clear. So we also got from Lori Lichtenstein. She looked into how many AED units there were in Ulster County. She sent us a detailed list, which is pretty cool. Did you all get that too?
Yes, I did. Yeah. Now, you know, I was pretty satisfied with what had been addressed. You know, my biggest concern were the potential costs to already struggling businesses out there, and if it was going to be significant, and then how, you know, they would have to come up with, the money to have those installed. But look, if the Narcan is going in already existing, defibrillator cases, then I think that kind of addresses that issue. I think overall it's a good thing, you know, and if you can potentially save lives at minimum costs or no costs, then I think it's a good approach to, you know, combating what's been out there for quite some time. So, with that said, you know, I'm happy to move forward with this, and whatever the pleasure of the committee is, you know, it's up to you guys as well.
I think that we should move forward with it, but I do think we should be prepared to address questions people might have, and that I kind of have about, but not really a question, but just recognizing that this is going to kind of hinge on how it's rolled out. If it's like, do we send a sticker to all of them to put a sticker that says Narcan on the box, right? Because that's part of the rollout. Do we send a letter to all of them that says, you know, you can get the Narcan, you can fulfill this mandate for free if you follow these steps. So there's the rollout of it is something that I realize doesn't have to be outlined in the legislation, but is something that whether it's, you know, from the county executive's office that would, or you know, just generally on the executive side through public health that would be rolling it out or whatever it ends up being, that's something that the implementation on the actual rollout, the promotion of it is probably going to be one of the most critical pieces.
Definitely. And that with this, there's usually, you know, a small advertising cost that's appropriated, $500 or something along those lines, which may be adequate to cover what you had mentioned, stickers or letters or something that's going to go out to the people that are required now to.
We could also reach out through the Chamber of Commerce too.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Yeah.
So Section 5 is a little vague, and if we're okay with it, I'll be okay with it, but it's the enforcement piece of it. It's something that I brought up last time. You know, if a business just doesn't do it, what's going to happen? What's the repercussions?
Sorry, I'm pulling that up now. Oh, the enforcement... I don't have it on this where I highlighted it, but council had put enforcement in.
Yeah, Laura, look in your OneDrive. I put it in just now. I don't know which one was older.
Okay, all right, because it was, legal counsel did a good job on the enforcement part of it. I just noticed on the one I've been shooting around, it just said enforcement highlighted.
Basically just says that there will be enforcement and it will be directed by the a department in the executive's office. That's what doesn't say what would happen or anything like that. So it's vague for sure. Mm-hmm. And we're okay with that, just saying, okay, the executives, some office in the executive's office is going to deal with this. But we're not spelling out anything clearly about what the enforcement is.
No, I mean, I didn't feel comfortable with enforcement putting in fines. I mean, this is a public service, and, you know, to hit a gym or, you know, even a municipality for $500, $1,000, you know, I'd much rather do it through education. You know, I'm thinking the enforcement's going to be going through the Department of Health and, or mental health. And of course, basically every town at this point has, trainees and trainers. I preferred it that vague without, again, you know, hitting them with large fines for not doing it.
If there isn't an enforcement aspect of this, then it's kind of like a volunteer type basis then, because if there's nothing holding people accountable if they don't do it, then what's the drive to make them do it besides, you know, a moral obligation or doing the right thing, which, you know, people always don't always do the right thing.
Deputy Ryder is flagging you down. I think he's got a response.
Oh, good. Okay, yeah, sure. Okay, go ahead, Mark.
I do think this is similar to, like, some of the local laws that have passed with leaving. I don't think that enforcement section is saying that there's no enforcement. I think it's just saying that it'll be left up to the department assigned by the county executive, which is similar. I think the composting local law had similar language. I think even the paper bag local law had similar language. We'll promulgate rules. You know, I don't think I would be supportive of this if this was a, we were really coming in heavy-handed to businesses right now in the middle of COVID and everything that they've been through, where we're going to fine people. But I think we can go around and we can do an educational piece where people know that they need to put this out, and we can follow up and enforce that they're having this here. The county is going to provide the Narcan. There's no reason not to put it in your AED.
I agree. I think both Laura and Mark are right. I don't think we need to put fines or anything in there. I think that's over the top as well. And I think actually, by the way, it's written in Section 5 is it's leaving that part of the decision up to the department that the executive is going to appoint to it, whether it be the Department of Health or Weights and Measures or whoever, I don't know, I'm just saying whoever is in charge of the actual implementation of it. I think they're going to be the ones to make that decision, not us.
So I just wanted to mention that I never mentioned fines. So
no.
Just to be clear, no, I really,
no, but typically enforcement means something like that.
I mentioned fines for this, so I just want to be clear on that. And I just wanted to be clear that the language is vague. And if we're okay with the vague language, I'm okay with that. But we have to recognize it is vague language in this resolution.
And I think it's done intentionally, and I think it's a great idea. I think I like the way it is.
Yeah, I'm comfortable with it.
Are these usually ironed out prior to moving forward with any local law, instead of, you know, kind of leaving it open and then, you know, figuring out when and if it's passed? And if so, are there any examples of other laws that we've done the same? Mark, you had mentioned like the paper bag law. It was kind of vague in how they were going to enforce it, but were those issues addressed prior to it coming to the floor and being voted on?
Not before it was voted on, before it was implemented. I believe there was kind of like, think of it as you all are passing the laws. Think of it like on the federal level, there's regulations and then there's laws. And I think the regulations came, or the rules came behind the laws on the paper bags. I think even composting, we're not there yet because implementation keeps getting pushed off for various reasons. But
right now, if this went to a public hearing And people, had concerns in the public hearing, were raising concerns about how it was going to be implemented and what are the repercussions if people don't follow through. And we don't have answers for them. How can we be accountable to the public if we don't have an idea of how that is actually going to happen?
Is there anything with the AEDs currently? Is there any kind of enforcement under that?
That's a state, I think. I don't know. It's a state regulation or law, so I'm not sure what the... I would think that there would be some kind of enforcement on that, but that's done through a different mechanism. I'm just going to go back and look at some of the other recent laws. I don't want to make something.
I could touch on a real rough nerve. Never mind. Change my mind.
Now, is this something, Laura? Is this something that you think we should address as well prior to moving forward with? I know that it's a public hearing, and then my concern is, if we figure this out later down the road and it potentially changes the law enough that it would have to go to another public hearing to be approved, then I wouldn't want it to be set back because right now it's somewhat incomplete in how this is going to be implemented.
Yeah, I mean, I've been on scrolling through the New York State health page, for weeks, and I don't see, other than it being mandated in swimming areas and public areas, didn't really find any strong language for the enforcement. When Chief Snodgrass and I had chatted, he said, a lot of that is left up to their OPP officer, their opioid prevention program coordinator, who goes in and makes sure that the Narcan units haven't expired and that they are actually in there. So I think as far as enforcement goes, I think it's strong enough. And you had asked for other laws. I mean, we have the straw law, we have the plasticware law, the composting. It's all, going in with guns a-blazing, especially now, isn't going to help, but knowing that those Narcan units are there and available to the public is going to make a big difference. I don't know if it was Deputy Roger or Deputy Milgram I had spoke to, but it's my understanding that we have them in the county building, and security's used them at least 3 times since they've been there. Is that correct?
Pat has the security officer in the county office building has Narcan on him and has used them in the past, not inside the building, but out, like in the memorial. He's found a couple times where he's found people unresponsive on the benches out there and used Narcan.
Could this possibly fall under code enforcement, like building code enforcement? Like, there's no fine if you don't have a grounded receptacle, but you're not going to see a vote without it. Kind of something along those lines. Like, there's no real strong fine line. It just becomes a code that you have to have it. End of story. Without it necessarily being to have that info. I think Laura's absolutely right. I don't think we need to overthink this. It just becomes a code and people will comply because it is a code.
Sure. No, and I understand that. I don't think it's a matter of overthinking. I think it's a matter of putting together the best law we can, and a complete law at that. That way, there aren't any unanswered questions. I feel somewhat uncomfortable if this is going to go to a public hearing, and part of the public hearing, somebody asks that is, how are we going to enforce this? And I don't look at it as coming, guns blazing or whatever, implementing large fines. I just want something that has a little bit of teeth that's going to not necessarily incentivize people to do it, but hold them accountable somewhat if they don't. Because if you have a law that says, this is what we think is best, and is it what makes them you know, just say, yeah, it's a good idea, but we're not going to do it. You know, and if there's 124 potential places out there, and there's nothing that's really making them do it except the, you know, mandate that doesn't, have any teeth that's going to enforce it, then why are they going to do it? Except for a moral obligation, and I can't really, you know.
Well, what's the same thing with the electrician's license, though? I mean, is there really much of a difference? We have codes, and that's what is required. Is there fines that go with it? No.
Well,
fines, but I mean, as far as enforcement goes, I think it's one of those, enforcement is going to be vague no matter what you do to it, because of who's going to be the one to actually pull the trigger on it, who's going to be the one to write the ticket or whatever it may be.
Sure. Abe and then Pete.
So I think the question is not, I don't think it's does this have the teeth or should we put more teeth in enforcement here? It's really, do we trust the executive to enforce it? And I do. I think if they choose to take a path like not, you know, approving new, the health department, not approving new restaurants that don't, you know, comply with this when they have to comply with the AED, then that's, you know, that would be fine with me. If we don't feel as a legislature that the executive is fulfilling the spirit of it because they're not enforcing it, we can always deal with that later. But I think it would be really hard to go to the public right now and say, hey, we have this really, you know, thorough enforcement mechanism when, you know, I think, you know, to Legislator Lopez's point, this is just not a time for that. In this moment here, I think we have to have a little bit of trust and a little bit of flexibility. And I think it's a lot easier for us to bring this forward in this format than it would be to bring it forward in a much more, you know, complex format, even if there was a perfect enforcement mechanism out there that we could get to and, you know, tell the public, hey, we figured everything out here and this is never going to change and we're codifying it now. I think we leave ourselves the opportunity to make it more, you know, stringently enforced. And if we feel we need to do that through legislation, we can do that later. And until then, I am comfortable with the executive's office enforcing this.
But then, yeah, and to that point, the executive's office enforcing what? Yeah, and enforcing the policy, but it's up to the legislature to create the policy of what to enforce. What are they going to be enforcing if we're not laying out specifically what has to be enforced?
I think that's laid out. I think it's clear that the spirit of this is that a business that's required to have an AED is required to have Narcan available at that site. And I think that is clear. I don't, if we're debating that, that's totally fine. That's not my understanding of what we're debating at this moment.
Pete.
I wonder if we could at least drill it down one more level and identify the county department that's going to be responsible for this.
I mean, I would prefer to leave that up. I mean, generally, as the policy makers, we leave that up to the county executive's office to make that decision, unless it's something very clear. And there have been times where I clearly would have thought it would be the health department. They put it under weights and measures or whatever. And it could be that another department may come along. I mean, we don't know what's going to happen in our future 10 or 15 years from now. So it could be very different, and it could be another department that's been reassigned, you know, the overview.
So again, I want to make myself perfectly clear. I am totally for this resolution, 100%. I just feel that if this is going to go to public hearing, this is vague, and I feel like somebody is going to call us on it and say, what does this actually mean? So I agree with Legislator Lopez that we have to somehow be prepared to say what this means or say we are intentionally leaving this vague because it will then be implemented, blah, 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 whatever we do.
It's the second one.
Right. So, yeah, no, and I agree with that as well. And what's the, how does everybody else feel about it then? Are you comfortable moving forward? Because, yeah, to Pete's point and the point that I'm trying to make is, you know, I would rather get it right now, you know, and be comfortable moving forward with the best piece of legislation possible than, you know, saying, hey, we can come back to it or we can add this or whatever later. Because, you know,
what do you think, Craig? What do you think as far as, I mean, you keep asking what if, but I'm going to be blunt. What do you where do you think we should go with it? How do you think we should address that?
Well, I think that there has to be some sort of enforcement policy. And to Abe's point as well, or maybe it was you, Al, you had said it with the electrician licensing. You know, I can't remember off the top of my head, but I'm pretty sure that there is a consequence to practicing without a license. You know, and whether it's a fine or, you know, something else that was implemented, there has to be something that holds them accountable if they practice without. And, you know, I just don't trust that people are going to do the right thing, you know, with this. Yeah. And I would want something that's going to hold them accountable if they don't do it, you know, unless you make this into, you know, a volunteer type basis, and then you're not going to need an enforcement, because then it's up to the proprietor whether they're going to do it or not.
Do you think that we should take the enforcement clause right out of the resolution?
Well, you know, if you make it a volunteer basis, then you don't need the enforcement clause. But yeah. if you're going to mandate that they do it, there has to be, you know, a consequence to not doing it in order to, you know, make them do it and then hold them accountable if they don't.
Mark's got his hand up.
Oh, Mark, go ahead.
So on the prior pieces that I've just looked through, I looked through three or four. The enforcement section is basically almost identical to this section. What this doesn't have that those other ones oftentimes have is violation penalties, which could be anything from a warning. So I'm just reading off of the plastic carryout bags and recyclable bags. It says the first, you know, time it's a warning. The second time is a fine of $100 for the first violation, fine of $250 for the second violation, etc. So that is the one piece that I think the enforcement aspect of what department is going to enforce and how we go about the rules and regulations could probably be left as is. If you all want to add some kind of penalty, whether it be a fine or a warning, whatever, that's up to you all. But I do think, again, going too large on it is going to be difficult for many of the restaurants and other, you know, gymnasiums are just opening back up. They've been out of business for the last 6 months.
And of course, the other way to look at it is if it is in our code or law, if they're not complying, that leaves them open for litigation. You know, if somebody runs over to the AED case and goes to grab the Narcan and it's not in there. But I mean, if it's the will of the committee to put fines in there, we could do that now. It's just the addition of an additional, you know, it's a penalty clause.
Yeah, you know, I just think that it'll give it credibility. You know, I think it'll act as a deterrent. You know, granted, how many people are actually going to not go forward with it? You know, I don't know. But at the same time, yeah, if they know that there's potential repercussions, it'll incentivize them to do it, whether they want to do it or not. You know, I just think it's a better approach. You know, I want the best piece of legislation now. I want to be able to tell the public, you know, this is what it is. It's the policy. This is how it's going to be implemented. And these are the repercussions if it's not followed through. It just takes kind of the guesswork. And we would have to know who's going to enforce it. Of course, the executive will enforce it, but through which department will it be enforced? Is it through, you know, the Board of Health? Is it through the DA's office? Is it through, you know, potentially the county attorney if there's any potential litigation? How are we going to move forward in a complete way? That way, you know, we don't have to come back and potentially change this later down.
So to move this forward tonight, what would it take to make you comfortable? Did we come up with numbers for potential violation fines?
Well, this is a public hearing that's right in front of us.
No, I understand that.
So to move forward with a public hearing, when you're going to change the law or add to it, that may potentially change it enough that would require another public hearing, I think would not be the right approach. I think that we would have to change the law and bring the change law forward and a public hearing that reflects the changes.
That's what he's asking. I think he's asking, what are those changes? So, yeah.
Oh, so what are the changes? The changes would, number one, we would have to figure out who's going to enforce the law, what department is going to go through. And then, you know, if we can potentially implement, you know, small initiatives that will deter people, if that's a warning and a potential fine, I think that that's the way to go. That will make me most comfortable.
So we should delegate which, you know, for the executive, delegate which department is going to be enforcing this?
I would believe so, yes.
But doesn't the executive ultimately have the ability to say, yeah, I want to put it to weights and measures, let them enforce it as opposed to the Department of Health?
Or buildings and grounds.
And that's fine, but that's something that we would have to figure out. That way we can include it in the policy.
I mean, at face value, it makes sense to be the Department of Health.
Right.
But on the flip side, though, it could also be a code enforcement issue where you're not going to see the vault if you have this equipment in your building.
Yeah, but we don't give – I mean, here's the tricky thing is this needs to be looked at further than I'm ready to say right now. Our health department doesn't have any jurisdiction over many of these buildings that you're going to require.
Right.
Our health department has jurisdiction over restaurants and other things, but gyms, beside the governor 2 weeks ago saying that we now have to look at the reopening plans of the gyms, we had no – jurisdiction to in a gym. Other public buildings that this, I have not seen the list of 125. I wouldn't be comfortable just saying for you all to say, hey, health department should be the one right now, or weights and measures, which I don't think would make sense on this one. But
that's why we leave the wording leaves it up to the executive to
make that decision.
Right. Lauren, let me ask you this. Do you feel that this is that time sensitive that we should move forward with a policy that, in my opinion, and I believe in Pete's opinion as well, is somewhat incomplete and should be addressed? Or is this something that you're willing to hold off on for another month, get it right, have these questions answered? That way we can put together the best comprehensive piece of legislation to move forward, present it to the public as is without any holes, and give them an opportunity to weigh in and then move forward?
I mean, I don't want to say it's time sensitive, but I believe with, you know, with the COVID, with the increase in opioid deaths and use, I think it's important that we get it done as soon as possible. And I'm not quite sure. I mean, I'm happy with it as written, so I'm not sure, you know, who's going to be making the additional revisions.
So can we make this voluntary initially to get it out there and get it rolling? And then first of all, it'll give us a great barometer to see who's not going to comply. And then if we have to pass another resolution in the future as far as making it mandatory in a way that it has fines or penalties for not complying,
right?
We can
and that's
a separate resolution,
and that And that would be the alternative. If you wanted to move forward with this as on a volunteer basis, you know, I think that would address the vagueness of, you know, potential fines and or who's going to enforce the policy. So if it's volunteer, then, you know, I'm okay with that. Pete?
So to me, then, that is not a law. A voluntary suggestion is not a law. A law to me is something that's written that has repercussions if you don't follow it.
Sure.
I got to agree with Pete. It's like a memorializing resolution.
Right.
And honestly, as this is, unless you're, you know, really don't want to put the $5 or $10 out and you're going to try to challenge it, I think, you know, once it's out there that this is a new requirement. I don't know, maybe I have more faith in folks, but I don't think you're going to get the pushback. And there's so many. Yeah, and there's a lot of opportunities out there. I mean, you could, as an owner of a gym, go out and get training, and then you've got your two-dose pack that you can put into your AUD equipment. I mean, I don't see we're going to be getting a lot of pushback on this.
I we have to get away from the content of what we're talking about. It's not about the content. I think we all agree this is a good thing to do. We want to get this out in the world. It's the structure of this actual law. Is it actually a law that's going to have some sort of requirements that are followed, or is it a voluntary situation where people can say, yes, I'm going to do it or not? So let's put the content of it aside. I think we all agree it's a good thing. The structure of this actual document, which we have to pass as legislators, is incomplete. We have to figure out how to make it a complete, or somebody at a public hearing is going to take it apart, and we don't want that. We want it to be as tight as possible.
So that was my question, Pete, to begin with. Can we tonight come up with an enforcement to put in there for the public hearing, without drastically creating another whole other public hearing?
Right, but in order to do that, we would need, the executive on board and prepared to tell us who they would delegate the enforcement role to. And I think Mark made it clear that he's not in a position this evening to, provide that answer.
I'm just going to say that's different than probably the last three or four of these local laws passed, because this language is, again, minus the penalty section, which would be something that you all could choose to do tonight. The enforcement section is identical to the rest, where it leaves the county executive shall designate a county department to have primary responsibility. Yeah. There may be three or four departments who are working on this. And so it's the primary responsibility. I mean, likely that's the health department, but you're going to have I think Craig, you listed, or somebody else, the county attorney, there's safety, there's other departments that are going to assist here. It's probably primary the health department. If you had to put one in tonight, that's where it makes the most sense, because they're the ones, you know, the Office of Mental Health is the ones that are going to be providing the Narcan, likely. So it's there. I don't think it's the DA. But I think that enforcement piece is similar to many of the last local laws. So it would just be a penalty section that told us what to enforce that would be needed.
Chairman Lopez, if I can just jump in real quick, because you guys are having a super cyclical conversation right now. I agree with Mr. Ryder. And if you recall, one of the main sticking points for electrical licensing board was exactly this conversation. And we left it up to the executive's office. Former legislator Rodriguez wanted it to be weights and measures. But in the end, it ended up being public work. So I agree with Mark on this, but I do feel like what Legislator Criswell and Legislator Bruno are talking about is an entire section that is not in the law right now, that is violations and penalties. So just to move this conversation forward a little bit, I think what you're talking about is inserting another section about enforcement and penalty, whether or not you want to do that, and what those numbers might be. And also, since I have the floor, I was right the first time. You guys did amend the title, and the wrong resolution was, it was a ministerial error. So your title that you're working with right now should be requiring naloxone stations next to every automatic external defibrillator AED unit at a public location. So just keep that in mind moving forward. We can dump that in your OneDrive right now, but you guys were stuck on the word equipment last time, if you remember. And Laura had said that she was fine with changing the title if we needed to just finagle it a little bit. So the actual title that you're working with is a local law requiring naloxone stations next to every automatic external defibrillator, parentheses, AED unit at a public location. Thank you.
Yeah. And if I could ask Deputy Ryder, could you read that penalties where it said the first offense was, I'll type it up and then I can submit that as an amendment.
Jay, can you, is it possible to share my screen?
Craig, your kids are having a blast there.
Oh, yeah, they're running around in there. I you hear them through the closed door, too. Yeah.
What am I actually sharing? Is it the...
It's a violations and penalties?
Right.
Yeah.
So this is from the carry-out bags.
Okay.
Can we copy and paste that to this?
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Because it's not over.
The legislative petite. So I'm not sure I'm actually comfortable just grabbing something from somewhere and cutting and pasting. I feel like it's like any sort of punishment. The fine has to fit the crime, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's, I just don't think we can just generically say, let's take the fines from one thing and put it to another. I think we have to do a little bit more research and find out what's a comparable situation that has fines and
to the language.
Use something that's a little bit more comparable to whatever it is we're asking people to do. So I just personally feel like we're trying to throw something together right now, and I'm not sure that that's the right way to do it.
I think I was referring, just to be clear, Peter, I was referring to the language because it's already been vetted out. And as far as plugging the numbers in, that's something we can discuss and fill in the blanks, so to speak. But at least the language is already done. We don't have to go through with a cut paste.
Right. Yeah. And to Al's point, yeah, it's a pretty boilerplate type language in that section. I think what we could do as a committee are plug the numbers in that we feel are most comfortable, you know, that we'd be most comfortable with. Yeah, most appropriate. Yeah, exactly.
I put that local law in the OneDrive for you if you wanted to look at it. You know, that one that Mark just shared.
So, Legislator Bino, I'm totally comfortable with the language, as you stated, and I just feel it's the numbers that we can't just transfer from one to another.
But that's something we would have to discuss and come up with appropriate numbers for that.
And I agree with that.
Like boilerplate is a perfect word for it, Craig. We just that just took care of a lot of Jay's work or Nettie's work, whoever's going to put it together.
Right. Sure. You know, I'm not looking to hit anybody over the head. I just want something that has, like I keep referring to, as a little bit of teeth. You know, and if that starts off with a warning and, and a second offense where people don't comply, you know, it's $100 or something like that. At least it's something they can look at and be like, okay, you know, this is something that we have to move forward with. And it would make me not even more comfortable. I just want the best policy we can put together to move forward that will...
Craig, I understand that and I appreciate that and I think I get it and as well, legislator as well, I get it. At the same time, while it's not time sensitive that we're you know, the world's going to come to an end if we don't pass this and move it forward mm-hmm. right now. It's time sensitive to those people who don't have access to that Narcan, that
sure.
that particular box may save that kid's life or that person's mm-hmm. life. That's why I think in certain ways it is time sensitive. To that end, I'm going to push it again. I'm going to say it again. Okay. If we boilerplated that language over to this amendment to this resolution, let's take it a step further. What numbers and what penalties does people
sure.
here are appropriate for this?
For not yep. No, and I agree with that. I don't see the, that actual section.
I just want to see this get done. I don't want to see you get hung up over stuff that, I mean, obviously I understand what you're saying, Craig, and I understand what you're saying, Legislator Criswell as well. And I think they're valid points, but I think we still need to move this forward and just correct those issues. That's all. It's a very simple thing to do.
Yeah. Now, is that something that the committee is willing to address now, or is that something that we can
address now.
Over the next? Let's do it
now. He has his hand up.
I was going to.
Yep, go ahead, Dave.
If we are willing to address it now, I think that would be ambitious, but I'm on board for it because as we talk about this, I'm feeling myself more and more in support of this law. If we do decide to delay this another month, I think it's fair to say that it will delay it delays the public hearing, it delays the implementation, it delays the rollout by a month. And in that month, at the rate that things are going, we will have another opioid death that perhaps could have been prevented by this product being in the place that it will be as a result of this law. Having said that, having some teeth for the enforcement might mean the difference between it being there or not being there when someone needs it as well. So, right. And that will prevent a death. So I see that on both sides, and in the interest of doing something that we all feel good about, two things. One, I think it's probably okay if we delay this a month, and I realize I'm speaking as if I have a horse in the race, and that brings me to my second point, which is that if the current sponsors, Bruno, Waro, and Petit would have me, I would like to join as a co-sponsor for this legislation.
Absolutely. Yeah, I would like to as well. Yeah, absolutely. And I think as a committee, we would all probably agree.
Committee could sponsor this.
As co-sponsors. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, definitely. You know, and that begs a question that I wanted to answer before, and that how many opioid deaths actually occurred in one of these 125 places, whether they're restaurants or wherever these the establishments are that have already equipped with these defibrillators. Does anybody have those numbers?
I don't have those numbers.
No.
What I can tell you is that what we think at face value where they should be are probably not where they are. And I'm only saying that information that I had gotten from a seminar I went to, Eve, I know you're out there, you probably heard from a girl named Cheryl Moore. They found out in Erie County, they expected the big concentration of opioid deaths to be right in the city of Buffalo. Turns out it was on a rest stop on the thruway. Well, they found that out through data mining and stuff of where it was. So to say, how many actually happened, we don't know. We don't have that data in yet. I don't think we do. Eve, if we do, please speak up and tell me I'm wrong. But I think if it's one, it's one kid's life, one person's life that is as important as the next. I don't think that means anything. And right. I think the more you delay it, that's one more person. I mean, every day people are dying from this because they either don't have access or because of the act to begin with. But
sure.
I'm really passionate about it. I think the faster we get it out, the more we get Narcan out into the public where they can use it, the less people get, the more people have a second chance. And I really believe that.
Yeah, no, I get it.
I agree with legislature. Uchitel, sorry. I, I understand where he's coming from with it, but I think, I mean, we're talking about putting three numbers. There's basically three steps to any enforcement across boilerplate stuff, a letter and a couple of numbers. I mean, if we, as a group of five of us or six of us, can't come up with those, I mean, it's really not that difficult to do. First offense, I agree. It should be a letter. It should be a strong letter worded from whatever department is in charge to that establishment. With the not, in that letter, they can include that the second offense will be a monetary financial hardship, that will be some kind of a monetary fine to go with it, if that's what we want to do, if that's what we feel more comfortable with it, of whatever number, whether it be $250 or $100 or whatever it might be. And the third offense should be double or triple what the first number was. I mean, it's not that difficult to come up with.
Right. No, I totally agree with that. And I'm actually comfortable with those numbers.
Those numbers that were on there for the other one, while I understand where Legislature Criswell was saying about not having to copy if he wanted to put some thought into it, when you think about what we're doing, I think a letter, no matter what it is, you should get warned first before it hits your pocket, especially in these times, especially these businesses that are just trying to get their heads above water and all of a sudden they slipped up and bang, they got slapped. So I think that makes sense. A warning letter is the first offense. Anybody disagree?
No. I agree with us.
The second one should be a fine that isn't going to cripple them, but at the same time is going to get their attention. Is $100 that much? Probably not. I mean, most of us probably carry that.
If you're using the plastic bag language, the section infraction is actually issuing a violation. The fines come in with the third.
With the third. So that's even further. That's even further along. Then. So I think. If you want to put teeth in it, make it real, then we can make it real. Will it change how many people in the public forum that are going to say this is a good thing or a bad thing? I don't think it'll make a damn bit of difference, personally. I think everybody's going to be for this, regardless of what we put down. We can put $250 and $1,000 down, make it real. We can do that.
I don't think anybody's asking it to be $1,000. I think all we're asking is for a reasonable set of repercussions if somebody does not follow the law. So I agree with everything that you're saying, Legislator Bruno, and I think that we should just come up with the numbers as well. So let's figure it out.
Honestly, I don't even think it'll ever get to the point where somebody's going to be fined. You know, if people don't move forward with this and comply, it's most likely because they overlooked it. If they get a letter that says they're in violation, they're going to, and know that potentially the next step is a $500 fine, then they're going to take care of it. So it's mostly a deterrent than it is, you know, collecting a fine or issuing a fine on somebody who's going to continue, or it's going to be a repeat offender. It's somebody who's going to be like, okay, you know, I got this letter. You know, let me comply. I don't want to get hit with a $500 fine because it's not going to cost me anything to put a Narcan kit in with a defibrillator. And that's mostly what it's about. It's a deterrent and it's holding people accountable. So yeah, if it starts with a letter and then moves to a $500 fine and, you know, or a $250 fine and then a $500 fine, you know, I'm okay with those numbers and that process.
With that too. Like I said, I don't think it'll ever get – I agree with you, Craig. I don't think it'll ever get to that point.
Yeah.
Can I just say one thing? If you're going to kind of parrot the language from before, just when you get down after you plug in the numbers, I think that Section D, it says a fine shall be imposed for each day a violation occurs or is allowed to continue. I think that should be taken out.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
take that out.
Yes, I agree.
Agreed.
That's for large stores.
So going back to the plastic bag law, it's 100, 250, and 500. Looking at it now, I would say those are fine numbers. You know, my point was that we just give it some thought. So
sure.
I would propose since it is a template that we have, why not use it? So.
I personally think the first offense would be a strongly worded letter from whatever department is in charge of it. I think the warning.
So the letter, $100 fine, a $250 fine, and a $500 fine?
Yeah, I think that's fine. And I think the letter should include what the additional fines would be coming forward.
So let me read the paper bag law in front of me. So it's the first violation is a written warning. The second one is the...
That should be a fine, not another warning.
No, it is. It's a $100 fine after the first violation.
Right. Yeah. Do you guys all have that language in front of you from the?
I had it. I read it real quick before it was up on my other device.
Mm-hmm. Mark, you're not looking at Section B. It's the revised one, the one that we did after the initial plastic ban. There's any covered store that violates or fails to comply with any of the requirements of this chapter after a written warning has been issued for that violation shall be guilty of an infraction. You guys are welcome to take it out if you want to hop right into fines, but if you're copying it word for word, you have a Section B that's letter, infraction, then fines.
No, I think it should go letter to fine.
Letter to fine.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I would just check with the attorneys. I think that's just I don't think that's actually saying, I mean, it would be an infraction. I think it's laying out, C is saying after the written warning, which is in A, that A, 1, 2, and 3 are the fine amounts. I think B is just laying out that it is an infraction. I could be wrong. But I think it's basically saying, you know, anything after the warning is considered an infraction, which is how you're giving the fine.
That makes sense. Yeah, I tend to agree with that. Otherwise, going from the warning to the fine, yeah, there has to be, yeah, it just lays out that it's an infraction. The infraction would be.
Just note you don't want to call it a covered store. Sorry.
Addressed by the following. Yeah.
So are we saying we're going to take the language from this, from the plastic bag law and remove D, but then keep the rest of it?
And it'll say instead of covered store, we'd want to change that to a public space with an existing AED unit.
E would need to just be tweaked, whether you want to put it back into opioid prevention or whatever you want to do. But again, it goes back to what the chapter about public education and outreach for the plastic bag law was. So.
And are we actually adding this as a separate section as it is in this local law?
Yeah, it would have to be.
Yeah.
Would it be Section 5 A and B?
Or sections.
B to the enforcement, or no? Jay's shaking her head. Sorry, Jay.
Was that a yes shake or a no shake?
That was a no shake. She's saying no.
Okay. That's you're gonna add a section for enforcement and penalties.
Yeah, because we have enforcement, so we'd add a separate penalty section.
Oh.
And I think the penalty section would have to go in front of enforcement.
Does it matter before or after?
It's after in the plastic.
Oh, it is.
It would have to be before severability, wouldn't it?
It goes enforcement and then violation penalties. That's how it goes.
There's Eve.
Can I ask a question? Like the defibrillator, are you going to require that at least one employee is trained to use this? Not to make things more complicated.
No, I mean, they're covered under the Good Samaritan law, just as they are with the defibrillator. But, you know, we weren't going to require that. Hold on.
I mean, technically, people are expected to be trained before they're using these.
Yeah.
Both. Just putting it out there.
Yeah, she's got a point.
Wouldn't that happen when they go and get it, though?
Drive. It's kind of a pain in the neck here.
Well, is your question here?
Well, they wouldn't be able to have the Narcan without the training to begin
with. Yeah, so someone's going to have to go and get it. So the person, like if it's a manager of a location that goes to get it to fulfill the requirement of the law, then to get it, they're going to get the training when they get it.
I guess I didn't know how you were thinking they were going to get it. Because they'd have to be able to have a supply, because as soon as they used one, they'd have to have another one.
Right.
I don't think...
Not under my one drive.
There wasn't an issue. Abe even froze up. There wasn't an issue as far as resupply or restock. It was the initial putting the box in the location to begin with. And you can't, the first dose, you have to have training to get it.
Right. This was a point that I had made at our last meeting. Yeah, because I when I had taken the training course, yeah, it was somewhat involved. I know Mary Worrell had sat in on our last meeting, and she had explained that the process is a little bit different. It's a little easier, I guess. It's already mixed and in a, you know, a spray type application process. So yeah, it's a little bit different from, you know, the couple of years back when I did it. Yeah, but no, also a concern that I had had.
They've actually made Narcan, anybody who's gone through the training recently, they've made it to the point where it's very similar to the AED, where you actually have, like Mark just pulled up in front of his TV screen there, of it's kind of cookie cutter. It's very easy to do. It's like they have that pictograph instructions for pretty much anybody, even without the training, can administer. If you could put a nasal spray up your nose, you can do that.
Yeah, basically the posters have those three criteria.
And they're with the kit.
Yeah.
I guess I would just ask, I mean, it's a little different, though, when somebody is overdosing in front of you for the first time. And maybe even if it doesn't have a training, that they at least ensure that somebody on site has familiarized themselves with the steps to implement it. I mean, I agree, it's not that complicated, but if the first time I was reading it was while someone was ODing in front of me, even those three steps can feel stressful. Plus, there's things in the training like you can't overdose them. So if after a certain amount of time they're not responding, you should do a second one. I mean, there are things like that go beyond the 1, 2, 3.
I understand what you're saying, Eve, but I think a lot of that was going to fall under the Good Samaritan, first aid, CPR. It's those type of things where if you're trying to help somebody, you're trying to help somebody.
Yeah. And I don't think, because one of the first things you're supposed to do is dial 911.
Exactly. That's the first thing
you're supposed to do. Dial 911. Yeah.
But what I'm trying to say is I understand, Eve, what you're saying, but it's just like sitting around somebody who was unconscious, they had a heart attack, and you do something. You know, and that could be a tool that person that's doing something. Whether they have the training, 911
will.
They're still going to make it work.
It definitely. Well, part of that 911 call will, you'll have somebody trained on the other side who will also assist you in walking you through the process. So.
Is there some educational materials that are provided with this as well? Because we could just say something to that effect that. Materials will be provided, and we're anticipating that the owner of the facility or the facility manager will distribute or will read them or something along those lines.
But doesn't that come from like whoever's doing the enforcement end of it? They're part of their job of giving, whoever getting this is also getting the training at the same time.
I also think part of one of these laws is that not everybody who, I mean, this Narcan box is probably in my office more than it should be. And if I'm out to eat at a restaurant, I'm not going to have it in my hands. But if I know that there's one at an AED box and I can just run over and grab it, it's more for people out there who aren't always carrying it all the time. They know how to use them and can use them correctly.
I don't think anything bad can come out of this. Personally. So have we came up, we come up with the penalty portion of it? Are we done with that?
Yeah, we'll include that in the actual law. That's not, we can't, it's not going to be added to the public hearing resolution. It's going to have to be added to the actual law.
And it probably doesn't have to be
added now.
It has to be in the public hearing version.
We can answer it.
Well, we can make the revision before it goes to the public hearing.
We can make the revision before it goes to the legislature in 2 weeks. Like,
right? No, and I agree with that. And that's on, you know, look, with the caveat that we're going to make these changes, I'm okay moving forward with the public hearing.
So, but you guys have to remember it goes to laws and rules, so it's not just you. You got to actually amend it so that it can go to laws and rules in its actual form.
So I'd like to make a motion to. You get a second?
What's the motion?
The motion is to amend the existing law to include a penalty section. We can't do that, Jay?
No, you can, but you also have to adopt the amendments that you have in front of you right now. Your amendments that you have highlighted, they're in front of you all in bold, so you need to adopt the law with those amendments and add in, I'm calling it section 6.
I'll make that amendment.
So you can do this in two amendments would be cleaner, to adopt the law in the form it is in front of you, and that's all Laura's amendments, with the knowledge that the title's wrong, but that's a ministerial thing. And then I'd appreciate a second amendment for this new section. It's just cleaner for your all, like record-keeping purposes.
Then I'll make the motion that we accept the amendments to the original.
As presented. Second.
As presented.
Okay. And I'll second that.
Right. Okay. And Laurie, on those... And on those amendments, all in favor?
Aye.
Okay. And now we need another motion.
I'll make a motion that we accept the we'll push this to laws and rules, is it, you said?
No, we need to make
your second amendment. Your second amendment is going to be inserting a new section 6.
Right.
Inserting the penalty phase to this.
Enforcement penalty that will read the same as the plastic ban section for language purposes.
Right. Yeah, what she said. I'll make that motion.
And the second.
Well, we are removing one piece of that.
Section D.
Yes. That we already did.
As agreed.
So I'll second that.
Okay.
Motion to amend.
On the amendment, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. Very good. All right. So now we have to...
Everybody's a co-sponsor, right?
Correct.
So now now I need a motion to adopt Resolution 266 with the local law as amended.
Correct. All right. So... With that said, we need a motion.
I'll make that motion, Bruno.
I'll second that.
Okay. Hey, if you want to make it, I'll second it. That's okay, too.
No, I'll follow your lead, Al. You got it.
I don't care either way. I'm very passionate about this.
I just want to move us forward.
Is there any discussion? No. Hearing none. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Very good. Very good. Thank you. All right, so we will move on. Resolution 317, approving the execution of a contract amendment in excess of $50,000 with AccuCare Nursing and Home Care. Move for discussion?
I'll move it.
Second?
I'll second it.
Okay. Any discussion? Yeah, you want go ahead.
Yeah, so we came a couple months ago to do an amendment to add the FEMA rider to the AccuCare nursing and home care contract at that time for $300,000, and we are now coming again to amend it for $200,000, I believe. this is our supplemental public health nurses. We have 7 or 8 public health nurses that work for the health department and do not only COVID response, but various other things, rabies clinics, STD clinics, other things, other duties. These nurses are responsible for helping with case investigations, monitoring. There's about currently somewhere between 450 and 500 people that they monitor on a daily basis who are in quarantine. So they make phone calls, they do contact tracing. This is also on top of last month we came to get a grant authorization to apply for a grant for the state to add 3 more public health nurses. As I don't know if you've paid attention in the news, but as universities are going back to school, SUNY New Paltz already has 3 cases so far this school year. Oneonta just hit a circuit breaker and had to close again for having 100 positive cases. As we start to open up back up, and not just businesses but schools, our nurses are busy.
I got a question, Mark.
Yeah.
The number is $150,000 more. Sorry. Than it was. It's $150,000 more above the $300,000, correct?
Correct. Yes.
So how many nurses are doing this?
So we have approximately 5 from this agency. We have 5 on the weekdays that come in, and we have 2 that supplement our staff on the weekends. So we basically have 2 nurses 7 days a week and 3 nurses 5 days a week.
And their salary comes to $150,000 plus the $300,000 or $150,000 only?
I'm trying on top. No, it's everything. This is amending. This is adding money onto the it's through an agency. The reason we're doing it this way, honestly, is there's 2 reasons. One, we're eligible for 75% FEMA reimbursement, which is not provided to us if we were to just hire additional staff. The other is that we hope that we won't have to use these nurses in kind of perpetuity, and hiring actual staff would bring with it legacy costs. So,
well, you say with FEMA reimbursement, so it's 75%. So you're saying, so the $150,000, 75% of it is going to be reimbursed by FEMA?
Out of the 450, because this is bringing it.
Oh, I'm sorry, 450,000, 75% of that is being reimbursed by FEMA.
Yes.
So county, ultimate county costs of this are what at the end of the day?
25% of 450,000, that is 100 and 12, not 112, 100 and what is that, 16.5?
125.
Not quite 125, I think. Not 116.
It is 112.5.
112.5. So it's going to cost, so $112,000, $113,000, and this could go up again too. And is FEMA guaranteeing us that they're going to back this up?
They've told us that this is an eligible cost.
It's an eligible. I heard that part, but is it guaranteed?
It's not guaranteed, I mean, until we actually get the money back, I would say, you know. But
so we still could be on the hook for the full amount.
We could be. I mean, we need the supplemental nursing. So we would either be hiring additional nurses, which would be – it wouldn't really save – by the time you took salary and benefits of 7 staff, it's not going to save – you much money on this $450,000.
I'm sorry. I don't quite get what you're saying there.
If you were to take a full-time salary and add on benefits, which we're not providing through this contract, of these 7 individuals that we're using, it would probably be close to a wash.
I'm just trying to think of the financial aspect of this whole thing. If it's actually a value to add these extra people and to pay this whole thing out. I understand the possible uptick with COVID and the contact tracing and everything, but I'm not entirely sold on the additional costs yet.
I hear you. We're not preparing for the uptick now. I think if there was a massive uptick, we've scaled this contract down a little bit from where we were using 10 to 12 public health nurses on a daily basis from this company when we did the initial $300,000 contract.
Right.
This is a pared down version of where we are right now. Again, we monitor somewhere between 450 individuals every day. They take phone calls. They have to be checked in by a nurse to see how their symptoms are, et cetera.
But at the end of the day, these five nurses work 8 hours a day.
Yes.
They're a standard 8 hour a job, full time job like everybody else. Okay. So these five nurses come out to $150,000 basically for 8 hour days.
There's five that work during the weekday, and then there's other nurses, two additional nurses that work on the weekends.
Are they, so there's seven?
Yes.
Seven new nurses that we're adding to the fleet, so to speak.
No, this is temporary. This is an agency. We're not
I'm just trying to understand how we went from $300,000 up to $450,000. And $300,000 got us through the peak of this pandemic. But now we're on the waning side, and there might be some ups and downs with it, and we're adding additional people to it. That's what I'm trying to reconcile in my head.
When we were at the peak, we were probably using 10 to 12 of these nurses every day. So that's what I'll, and we went through that 300 pretty, that 300 is gone. That's why we're coming to increase the limit on this contract, because that we've gone through that 300. Now we're putting it out. We're hoping to get it out high enough to where we don't have to come back in, 2 to 3 months and ask again by amending it again. We believe this will get us through what we hope will be the rest of, our needing of supplemental nurses.
I hear you. I'm not sold, to be honest with you. You understand why, I think. I can tell by looking at your face.
It's all expensive.
No, you don't want to speak out.
I'm looking at value more than price, to be honest with you. I'm looking at where we are in this pandemic versus where we were and where we're going. And that's what I'm trying to justify where we're coming up with these numbers. $150,000, when we're $35 million in a hole, it's not a small chunk of change.
No, it's not.
And that's what I'm trying to analyze in my head. I don't think I'm so far off base with that.
And we had all hands on deck. It was everything, because basically all our other healthcare services were shut down, so to speak. But everyone was addressing the COVID issue. So, no portion of this, you said, is going to go for additional care. But there must have been overtime.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was all of that. Yes, as you were saying, it was all hands on deck. Every public health nurse that we had, we didn't have a single clinic. We didn't have a STD clinic. We didn't do any of the other work that we were doing. We had everybody focused on COVID. At some point, we need to get some of these public health nurses back. We have flu season coming up. We do, flu vaccinations. We do other things. We need to also continue on COVID, because it's still a big portion of our work, but some of our in-house nurses need to focus on what their other day-to-day jobs were as well.
I thought everything was COVID. There was no, once COVID hit, we no longer had the flu. I thought that went away.
I wish.
Based on the numbers that were thrown at us, that's what happened. Sorry, but
starting. I know people that have gone out to get them.
All right. Any other discussion?
Yeah, I'm not, I'm not entirely sold on this yet, to be honest with you. That's another big chunk of change that I'm not so sure that the county needs to spend, to be perfectly honest with you. I understand they do a valuable job, but as the numbers have dropped to virtually nil down to a handful of positives that we have, that's a big number. That's half of what we've used during the entire COVID process.
Hey. Yeah, I just want to speak to my interaction with this function of the county's work in the really, really early days. I'm not speaking as a, you know, from a position of, you know, expertise where we are right now, but I did volunteer for a week beginning March 13th, and March 13th was a really crazy time before anyone could really move money around and do anything. And it was these nurses, this type of function that needed to be put in position really quickly. So if we do have a moment like we had then, you know, we won't be able we have to react incredibly quickly. So, you know, if I think back to what my experience was like helping with the that whole situation in the EOC and volunteering and helping with the phone line and seeing all of those nurses going out there, if I could go back and change one thing, it would have been more nurses getting out there more quickly and doing that as an early response tactic, not necessarily as a flattening the curve thing, but as a, you know, that when you're ramping up. So I just think I just wanted to share that for perspective. I think it's one of the most important things when you're anticipating that something might tick up, which I think we are when you look at what's happening in Oneonta.
Trying to support this because I do feel like everything that I've read about the second wave possibilities, and I feel like if we're going to be spending money, this is a place where I feel strongly it's like a better safe than sorry kind of moment. So I'm going to support this.
All right. Anyone else?
I think Eve had a question.
Oh,
I'm just curious, Mark, is this to prepare for a second wave, or is this based on numbers that you have currently?
It's mostly based on numbers that we currently have. We will not go through this contract nearly as quickly if we don't have a second wave, right? This is a rates contract. So if at any time we decide to go down to one contract nurse because that's all we need, we are able to do that inside this contract. And then we're only... Or we could, if we didn't need any, we would go down to zero. Now, you know, this is done on a week by week basis. So right now we use the five with the two on the weekends. And that's still with our nurses working full schedule and mainly focused on COVID. They do a few other things to try to get back to their other job. But this is just taking us out a little bit, and it is for working at the current rate. If there's another second wave and it gets bad and we need to bring in another 12 nurses every day, we'll probably be back on this one, but we would do that in the future.
All right. Well then, yeah, sure. Only one more though. You only get one more.
No. When he said that that they would vary the number of nurses that they need, who does that? Who actually says we need one or we need two or we need 10?
Our Commissioner of Health.
Commissioner, okay.
Okay. All right then. All in favor?
Aye.
Al?
Yeah, okay. I'm reluctantly saying yes, but I got to be honest, I'm not entirely sold on that number. It's a lot of money for, you know, I see the numbers that are being presented are very low. I mean, yes, they're out there, but they're low. COVID's a nasty thing with a lot of things. We don't know about it yet. So I'll be a yes this time.
Well,
it's got to come to the month asking for another $150,000 to add it to. We may have another problem.
Well, it still has to come at the floor, Al. So, you know, if you want to speak on it on the floor, you know, and make your point, I think it'll be received by a larger audience. Okay. So, okay. Very good. All right. We will move on to the last resolution. 324, calling for a swift implementation of the New York State Drug Take Back Act. Move for discussion.
I'll move that.
Second.
Okay. Discussion. I guess that you have joined us this evening, Eve.
I just wanted to give a little background for those people who might not have it. So at the state level, the drug take back, they signed that into law in 2000. Well, first of all, let me just say that research shows, especially for kids, the primary way they get hooked on opioids is getting access to prescription painkillers that they find in medication cabinets and other places, in their own homes and other people's homes. I lost somebody last month, was a young girl, 22, and that's exactly how she got hooked on the opioids. And so there's been such a huge effort to ensure that there are good, safe ways to have excess prescription pain medications out of the households and out of the hands of young people and anybody, but anyone who isn't prescribed them. So the act was signed in law in New York State at the state level in 2018 to take effect in January 2019. In July, so a year ago, pharmaceutical companies were told, manufacturers were required to submit their take-back plans. Some of them have and some of them haven't. Department of Health was supposed to complete a review of all these plans, but because they're not all done, the review hasn't necessarily been done. There were draft regulations that were done in fall of 2019. They had public comment already on this, and the final regulations are yet to be implemented by the Department of Health. And they're not published. It's already been closed to comment. Now, I would have wanted to just do a local law requiring our pharmacies to do this, but they have a caveat in their law that says that you cannot have a local law. And for good reason, probably, so that no local municipality does less. Unfortunately, you can't even have a local law saying do the same thing and just implement it. So because of that, this is a memorializing resolution just telling Department of Health at the state level, let's get it done already. Because as you all said in many other conversations, every day that these medications aren't properly disposed of is another day that another kid is getting their hands on them.
I agree. I'm all for this.
Yeah.
I'll make a motion we pass this resolution.
All right. Yeah, I think that's great. So, yeah, we already moved it and seconded it. So, okay. Yeah, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right. Very good. All right. Thank you. Anything else? Anybody have old business, new business?
Yeah, if I could follow up with Legislator Walter had mentioned about the surveys. You know, Tom Cajun's been asking, what we used to do surveys, through the schools about drug use and access, including, you know, marijuana use, et cetera. You know, and I realize we're kind of in a state of limbo, but is there something we can do or can we expect an update of that survey so we can see how many kids? I mean, I'd really like, so we've got the Narcan and we've got AED equipment, but I would like to see real preventative. And I think the only way to follow through on that would be to see how bad the use actually is before anybody ends up, you know, in a rehab unit or needing services.
So can I answer that?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
So, I do these surveys. I used to do them in Ulster County, and I do them in Dutchess County and Orange County and some places in Long Island County. it, some places use the OASIS funding to conduct this, and we used to here in Ulster County use OASIS funding. Dutchess does that. Orange does it differently. Their BOCES pays for it. But it, you know, it's not exactly required, and so Ulster stopped doing it. I think that getting someone in from Ulster Prevention Council, Cheryl is the director, and talking to her, you know, the problem is OASIS has cut lots of funding also, and has or directed its funding more towards ESPRT and other kinds of higher end responses than preventative surveys. And so it might have to be, it's not that expensive to do this as the person who charges. it might be something we want to include ourselves to support, this happening in Ulster County. And, you know, it is challenging to, it has been challenging with OASIS. OASIS also does the state level one, and it picks one of our school districts. And they'll probably do that again soon, but that doesn't really tell you the whole county. It just tells you the whole state.
Thank you.
Okay. Is there anything else?
We'll have to hear from the public. Chair?
I'm sorry?
Are we allowed to hear from the public?
Oh, you mean that's on the meeting also?
So I'm asking if it's a will of the chair.
Cajun has his hand raised. You may not.
Oh, yeah.
You may be on the speaker.
Yeah.
I think you're on the speaker view, but.
Yeah. No, go ahead, Tom.
Yeah, I mean, for over a decade, we've been doing the high school surveys. All of a sudden, they got, the prevention program got a request from the county to stop doing it. I'd like to know who told them to stop and why.
Or if it was a funding issue.
Probably wasn't.
Well, it occurred
to me.
It was the 2018-2019 year. I don't think we had a problem with money at that point.
It was the prior Deputy County Executive Cornell was overseeing health and mental health. So I don't know who had asked for that.
Thank you very much.
I can look into it.
That's the way I suspected.
Okay. Was that it, Tom?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Does anybody have anything else? All right. Do I have a motion to adjourn?
I'll make a motion that we adjourn.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
All right. Very good. Well, thank you, everyone. And everybody stay safe. And if I don't see you before, we'll see you next month.